This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Finding Your Bliss with host Judy Liebrack, heard every Saturday at 1 p.m. on Zoomer Radio.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Finding Your Bliss, the show that helps you find and follow your bliss. I'm Judy Liebrack, and today I'm joined by Linda Kohanov, the author of many books, including one of her most famous books, The Tao of Equus, A Woman's Journey of Healing and Transformation Through the Way of the Horse. And there it is for when this comes onto YouTube, you can all see it. Now in its new and revised edition, 23 years after its original publication, where it was named one of Amazon.com's best books of 2001. And questions like, do horses make choices? How do they seem to know what people are thinking and feeling? Are horses actually spiritual beings? What do they teach people? And why are mostly women attracted to horses? These are some of the many questions that are answered in this updated version Kohanov weaves in The Tao of Equus. Kohanov also weaves new developments in neurological science and scholarship into her original exploration of spiritual awakening, cultural history, and all this wonderful mythology. I loved reading all about this Greek mythology all throughout. This is heady stuff. The Tao of Equus delves into the mental and spiritual process behind magical experiences that humans have with horses. And what we know is there's a beautiful mystery of healing and transformation between the human and the horse. Linda Kohanov is an internationally recognized author, speaker, and educator who specializes in developing and teaching socially intelligent leadership, nonverbal communication, and other advanced human development skills. In 1997, she founded a Southern Arizona-based collective of all these wonderful educators and coaches, counselors, and horse professionals exploring the power and potential of the horse-human bond. The organization, Aponiquest Worldwide, has grown to serve clients on 6 continents. She has many best-selling books. Today, as mentioned, we're going to focus on The Tao of Equus, which was selected, as mentioned, as one of the top books back in 2001 by Amazon.com, but it's also received numerous very appreciative reviews in diverse publications. Over the last decade, Linda has appeared at numerous conferences and retreat centers all over the world, including the Omega Institute in New York and University of Arizona, and on it goes. I want you to check out her website after, and we'll direct you there to learn even more. She has also been a leadership trainer for Raytheon since 2007, has led trainings for executive teams at Nike and Chubb Insurance, Best Friends Animal Sanctuary, and the Benzman Group of Financial Advisors, among other companies. She also leads masterclasses all over the world. Linda is also part of a research team led by Dr. Ann Baldwin with the University of Arizona that has been studying the physiological effects of various equine-facilitated activities on elder populations and in the context of leadership training. Her seminars attract, get this, business leaders, entrepreneurs, educators, scientists, mental health professionals, artists, clergy, and social activists from 6 continents. Since 1997, Linda has trained thousands of people all over the globe. The demand for seminars actually became so great that starting in 2002, Linda began training instructors capable of leading their own seminars in the Aponiquest approach, connection-focused therapy, and the master herder model. Over 300 Aponiquest instructors from 6 continents have graduated from this highly successful in-depth apprenticeship program. Those who've done advanced training in the 5 roles of a master herder model are featured as recommended instructors on the masterherder.com website. Linda Kohanov, welcome to Finding Your Bliss.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here, Judy.
Congratulations on this new and revised edition of The Tao of Equus, A Woman's Journey of Healing and Transformation Through the Way of the Horse. And before we talk about this exciting revised edition, and congratulations again on all of this, can you tell us briefly about your book and what was that original inspiration behind The Tao of Equus?
When I wrote The Tao of Equus, I was going crazy in the human world. I was working at a radio station, and I was also a music critic, and people were just driving me crazy no matter where I was at. So I got my first horse. It's easy to keep a horse here in the desert in Tucson area. And so I got my first horse to get as far away as possible from the human race on a regular basis, just to renew and get out of the craziness. And what I found instead was that my horse was acting out emotions that I wasn't even aware of, not only in myself, but in my fellow boarders and riders. No matter what they said their emotional state was, everything was fine, or they were in control, or they were powerful, or they were relaxed, the horses would actually act out what they were really feeling. Mm-hmm. And I thought, wow, that's amazing. I mean, these days I have an understanding of actually how that's possible. But back then I was like, wouldn't it be great if we could bottle this somehow and teach people in relation to what the horses are showing us? Because they show us what we're really feeling and sometimes trying to hide or suppress inside. Yeah. Yeah. So they're like beacons of authenticity. So I began to also shift some things in my relationship with my horse that I took back to the human world and had immediate success with people. And a lot of it was nonverbal communication that was then in sync with the message I was trying to send. So often we portray something while we're feeling something else, and then that creates static, actually. So when you can actually understand what you're feeling, what you're really thinking, and actually sync that up with your body language and radiate that out to the world, you're much more effective immediately. And I also learned how to set boundaries with people who were more aggressive in really relationship enhancing ways. I mean, once you can set boundaries with a 1,000-pound animal, your 200-pound boss who's trying to push you around is not such a big deal anymore. Mm-hmm. And they don't even sometimes know what hit them when you know how to shift an aggressive move into a move that's associated with cooperation and really reward people for that nonverbally. Everything in your life changes.
Wow. Your relationships with people, with your partner, with your family, your children, not just, you know, this is very wide, you know, it can help you in so many different ways. What were some of the things that you did initially in your relationships in the real world once you became aware of this?
Well, I had this rather intimidating boss at the radio station where I worked. I was the morning classical announcer at that time. And he would intimidate everybody. He just threw his weight all around. And one day I just decided to use some of the techniques that I use with horses to set boundaries in ways that reward calmness and cooperation nonverbally. And everything shifted with him. He didn't shift necessarily with other people, but in his relationship with me, he became very respectful and all of that changed. So I just thought, wow, wouldn't it be amazing if everybody could learn these things? So that's when I began to understand that I could work with horses to teach people advanced human development skills. At that time, there was also therapeutic riding for persons with disabilities.
Yes.
And that's very effective, but also emotional and spiritual issues and issues related to how to be assertive without being aggressive, mm-hmm. and how to gain cooperation while also holding an area of respect for your own space and your own ideas and your own ability to speak your truth. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't it be nice if everybody could learn this and then also learn it in this really fun, gentle way, coming out to the ranch, working with horses? We work with horses on the ground. This is not about riding, not what I teach, even though I was a riding instructor for a while. But these same techniques also help people who are riding or people who are competing and showing professionally with horses. And
wow. So
I started to write my first book, and then 5 books emerged from that total. So
that's so incredible. That's so incredible. And it's interesting because at the very beginning, your parents did not encourage this. They were a little bit afraid of horses. They didn't like horse riders and horseback riding and this whole world. But you would sneak out. You were determined to do this kind of work because you were passionate from the very beginning. What was it about horses going all the way back to being a little girl and just wanting to go to the stables and be there and be part of it?
Well, I had to sneak off to an old horse trader's farm that was within walking distance through the woods behind my house. Yeah. Because my parents would not let me take riding lessons. They were afraid of horses, as you mentioned. So I would go back there. I mean, really, they would have been much better off in terms of my personal safety if they had given me riding lessons.
Right.
Because I was sneaking back there and I was riding whatever horse that would stand still enough for me to get on their back. So, yeah, because my parents were afraid of horses, they wouldn't get me riding lessons. And I still felt compelled to be with them. I was fascinated with horses and other animals too, but horses in particular really spoke to me. And so I found this old horse trader's farm within walking distance through the woods behind my house. And this property would back up to the back of his horse trading operation. And I would sneak back there and I would play with the horses. I would run around with them. I would lure some over to the fence and get on them bareback because I didn't have a halter or anything. And I could tell I began to like read serious nonverbal language just to stay safe, because at a horse trader's ranch, you might have crazy ex-race horses, and you might have old horses, and you might have horses that have been traded out because they threw too many people riding. So anytime I was playing with them, I was taking a risk, but I was also able to read the body language of those who were peaceful and cooperative, as well as those who were about to spook or about to get aggressive. So in some sense, going to the horse trader gave me a lot of nonverbal skills as a child I wouldn't have been able to achieve otherwise.
Right. Isn't that incredible? So this has been a lifelong passion for you. And I guess I'm just fascinated by the concept that horses can teach people to be better humans. And I'm so interested in how horses can help us lead more satisfying and meaningful and blissful lives. How is all of this possible, and how can horses ultimately help us to become better leaders, as you suggest, and better people, and actually make our world a better place, which we need desperately?
Truly. If we could spread horse wisdom around the world, I think a lot of things would change for the better, that's for sure. Because first of all, horses are not predators. They are our primary animal companions who are not predators. Mm-hmm. All of our other animal companions are carnivores. You know, even dolphins, not that we have pet dolphins, but a lot of the animals that we consider to be able to connect with the human race are carnivores. And so they tend to accentuate predatory perspectives in us as well. And our culture is highly predatory. It's a conquest-oriented culture. And so humans are omnivores. And we've just been taught to overemphasize predatory, conquest-oriented power over behavior.
Yes.
But when you're around horses, what you see is another form of power, non-predatory power. So I've really begun to, well, I've written about extensively, what does non-predatory power look like? Horses are fully capable of protecting themselves from predators. The average predator does not attack a horse in its prime. They're looking, they're slinking around the edges, looking for the small one or the weak one or the one who's just born or the one who's been injured. And horses will also perform altruistic acts to successfully save vulnerable herd members. They don't just automatically run off. Mm-hmm. And once you begin to understand that, this power, this grace that's completely non-predatory, it just gives you a whole new understanding of how you can be effective in life.
Wow.
And this is really important for people, let's say, who have been raped or traumatized by other members of their own species. Mm. Because if you go back into life, you need some level of power and influence to be successful. But if you've been victimized by predatory members of your own species, it's really hard for these people to accept power because all they have is this predatory vision of power.
Mm-hmm.
So this really transforms also. I work with a lot of people who have been, you know, raped or abused, and they're able to come back and learn these non-predatory forms of power and influence that also draw upon relationship and the bringing people together to stand with you. So this is not about being a lone wolf. This is about the power of the herd, essentially, which is one of the titles of my later books.
Isn't that incredible? I also sense, and I remember reading somewhere in your book, that if you're hurt, when you were hurt, the horse sensing it. So it's not just being altruistic. They actually have emotions and feelings, and they want to protect you, which I never would have known.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when I first wrote The Tao of Equus, what you just said was very controversial. But now in the 2020s, there are a number of scientific studies and theories and peer-reviewed research out there that show, first of all, that animals do have emotions. That came out in 2012 with the Cambridge Declaration on Consciousness in Non-Human Animals.
Wow.
So when I wrote the original Tao of Equus, and I was out doing lectures and book signings in 2001, and I would talk about emotions in horses, people would get up and walk out sometimes.
Yeah, I read that.
And now I just say, no, it's already been proven. We don't have to worry about that anymore. And another thing that's really influential that I bring into the new book is the polyvagal theory by Dr. Stephen Porges.
Yes.
And that theory shows that all mammals have the same innovation in the nervous system that causes them to sense what others are feeling and then have the ability to co-regulate others who are in distress. And so the nervous system of horses and humans is designed to seek safety through connection with others.
Right.
This is difficult for people who've been traumatized by members of their own species, but you can get the same circuitry in your nervous system reconnected and online by interacting and having a close, safe connection with a horse or a dog or a cat as you can with humans. So that's why animal-assisted therapy is so effective. And then you add the horse as an example of non-predatory power, and they can absolutely sense when you're distressed, and many of them will come over and comfort you at that moment. Mm-hmm. Those are the ones who are best for this field. Some of the more advanced horses that I work with, I teach people how to then help regulate a dysregulated, aggressive horse, but that's more of an advanced move. But that helps you in all your relationships. So, like, I had a homeless man almost attack me one day, and I could see it coming. He was obviously having a mental illness episode. I could sense the difference in him walking toward me, just the same way I can sense when a horse is becoming dysregulated. And I use the same techniques involving breathing, actually. Wow. I noticed that you're very much engaged with breathing and mindfulness, where I was able to calm and move around this person who was immediately becoming highly aggressive. But that's because I did this with a 1,000-pound stallion who had been abused, who would, you know, who could have killed me instantly if I didn't know how to handle all of this.
What was that 185-pound man after exactly a 1,000-pound horse?
It's exactly.
You actually, I read that Dr. Rebecca Bailey introduced you to the polyvagal theory almost 20 years ago after you wrote the original version of the Tao of Equus, and you said it was like blasting a spotlight into a dingy, darkened barn. Suddenly, training sessions made sense. Everything made sense. What did you learn most from Dr. Rebecca Bailey about this whole idea of the polyvagal theory? Just for the audience, I just want to help define the polyvagal theory in simple terms. The polyvagal theory focuses on what is happening in the body and the nervous system and the role of the vagus nerve, which evolved to protect us from danger and keep us safe and connected to our evolutionary past. This theory suggests that the state of our nervous system determines how safe and connected we feel in day-to-day life.
Dr. Rebecca Bailey and I have created a modality called connection-focused therapy. She's a psychologist. You've seen her on CNN. She specializes in abduction cases.
Wow.
And family reintegration, high conflict divorce even. And so she contacted me when my book, The Power of the Herd, came out, because I talked about it being a non-predatory approach to social intelligence, leadership, and innovation. And she had been working with J.C. Dugard, who has received a lot of attention for having been kidnapped and kept in this predator's backyard for like 18 years. And then she was rescued. And then she has two daughters by him now. And she needs to move into the world and become empowered herself. And she's worked extensively with Dr. Bailey, started her own foundation. And Dr. Bailey was really intrigued by the idea of a non-predatory approach to social intelligence and leadership. So that's how we first got together. And then we started creating this modality. And then Dr. Bailey began to spend quite a bit of time with Dr. Stephen Porges. And so she said, I think a lot of what we're doing is actually based in working with the polyvagal nervous system. And so the more we began to bring the polyvagal theory into what we were doing, the more we understood, first of all, why the work was so effective. And then we began to put an order to certain activities that made sense in terms of training the nervous system. Mm-hmm. And so that's how we came together. And she's still in contact with Dr. Porges, and we really are enjoying this partnership.
So this collaboration, does this also have something to do with the psychologists you've worked with in the equine facilitated psychotherapy world? You're considered one of the founders of the field of equine facilitated experiential learning. Do you use that approach? Do you use this polyvagal theory in your work with equine facilitated experiential learning, which teaches people how to excel in their lives by practicing innovative leadership, relationship, nonverbal communication, all the things you're talking about, emotional and social intelligence through safe, non-riding activities with horses. How does the polyvagal thing factor into that work that you do?
It factors into everything. So, I mean, I have two divisions to what I do. So as, you know, truly one of the founders of the field of equine facilitated experiential learning, this is for people who are reasonably well adjusted, who really want to learn how to excel in life. Mm-hmm. And then when I work with a therapist who's licensed, we do a series of activities and we actually slow things way down when we work with people who've been traumatized and go at a more gentle pace with more gentle horses in the beginning. But I, you know, sometimes I'm teaching a leadership class with the horses and there's somebody in that class who has experienced trauma. And so I have to be able to recognize that and also titrate what we're doing and shift things so that this person is taken care of without drawing attention to the fact that they may be having a trauma response, because that's not something that you want to bring up in a business setting. If a team of leaders comes here and one of them's been, you know, raped as a teenager and something triggers that person or activates that person, I need to know how to contain that and how to shift it and move it forward. And then also have a private meeting with this person and help them find the right trauma therapist to help them move through this.
Wow.
So yeah, we try to keep the two separate, but sometimes you have to step in when somebody has an extreme response or a memory come up that they didn't expect, contain it, and then get them the help in more of the equine facilitated therapy direction. But we don't want to do therapy for leaders. That's ridiculous. That happens a lot when people talk about emotional intelligence training. They go somewhere and they take them into a therapeutic orientation that's not appropriate for the workplace.
Right.
So we make sure we...
Right. I understand this. I'm a life coach. I always say that therapy is sort of getting you from minus 10 to zero and coaching is getting you from zero to plus 10. It's really two separate groups and they're both very important and they can work together. But I, as a coach, when I see someone and I notice the little red flag going up, that there's some deep psychological stuff here, I'll just go, no, this is a therapy thing. And I will make a recommendation to a therapist.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, so it's I get that. That's really, you're doing some very, very incredible work. It's this is a long way from radio. Did you study therapy? Did you study being a therapist?
No, I was always interested in the possibility of maybe going and getting a master's in counseling or something, but I was a music major. So, you know, a lot of people, their parents don't let them play music because they want them to do something practical. My parents like ushered me into music to try to get me to stay away from horses. So I have a degree in music. I play the viola. I now play a 5-string electric violin, viola. I do a lot of performance now. And horses actually helped me to step out of the rigidity of classical training into this open place where I could really follow my heart's desire and the kind of music I wanted to make. So I also work with people who want to be musicians or who are musicians who are feeling hindered by performance anxiety. And we do work with horses that shifts things. And then they feel real freedom to play and express themselves. So we do a workshop called Nada Brahma, The Universe is Sound. There's actually one coming up in September where we bring horses and music together. And it's a combination of people who want to play music, who've been afraid to do it, and then people who are very accomplished musicians who want to move beyond performance anxiety. And we bring in music and horses together during various activities. Mm. And it really opens things up in a beautiful way.
It gives me the chills. This just sounds absolutely glorious, absolutely incredible. Do you ever take a person who's a little bit phobic about horses? That would be me.
And, absolutely.
And help desensitize them. And how would you go about doing that? Don't answer that just yet. We're going to go on a short commercial break. When we come back, we'll find out the answer to just that. Back in a moment.
Finding Your Bliss is brought to you by Create, Canada's leading fertility center for over 25 years.
Create is here for anyone struggling with infertility or in need of assisted reproductive technology to have children. Create is about cutting-edge science from highly skilled doctors. In unprecedented times like these, Create is about ensuring the safety of all patients and staff. Create has made important changes to protect you by ensuring social distancing, wearing masks, as well as screening before entering. So what about the bundle of joy that you've been hoping would come into your family? Create Fertility Center is here for you. Visit createivf.com to keep up with the latest changes and learn about Create Fertility Center's comprehensive care for every fertility journey. Keep safe and healthy during these challenging days, remembering that life is about moments that we create together.
Hi, everyone. We're back. This is Finding Your Bliss on Zoomer Radio, and I'm here with Linda Kohanov. And just before the break, Linda, I was asking about how you help desensitize people who are afraid of horses.
Well, it's not desensitizing. We want you to use your senses.
Right.
So that's the first idea.
Right.
It's a little bit different. But yeah, we first of all, we have you work with horses in the beginning that have the capacity to, in polyvagal terms, co-regulate a dysregulated human. We have horses that are talented at that and can do that.
Wow.
And so we would be starting with those horses, and we would be having you do very gentle activities, and we would teach you a certain kind of breathing that helps you to feel regulated in the face of uncertainty, a little bit different than the breathing you showed me. But there's actually a YouTube video I've done that shows the power of this breathing and kind of what it is.
Awesome.
And it's just, if you go to YouTube and look up Linda Kohanov heart breathing, if you look that up, you'll see me showing this breathing with a horse, and you see me just standing perfectly still, engaging this breathing, having a shift in my whatever I'm radiating outward, and having this horse look at me as if I materialized out of thin air and walking over to me, and I haven't moved a muscle. I'm not holding carrots. I mean, I can use this breathing also to calm fighting dogs. I use it with people who are beginning to fight or beginning to become distressed. And it really, really shifts things. And that's part of what we teach in this. And I think that you would really enjoy coming and learning this.
I would.
It would fit into
yes.
the mindfulness training that you do.
Yes.
And take it to a huge level of understanding how you can move a 1,000-pound horse by using simple shifts in breathing and consciousness.
Can you give us a little sort of example of what the breathing looks like here?
Sure. And, you know, this is something that I learned from a horse years ago, and I learned it was effective. But then I found out when I was working with Dr. Ann Baldwin at the University of Arizona, she said, you know, that's the kind of breathing that they teach at HeartMath that they call coherent breathing. And it's different where you, like a lot of meditative breathing, you breathe in, you hold it for a few moments, then you breathe out, and then you pause.
Yes.
That's often referred to as box breathing. And coherent breathing is different in the sense that you breathe in for about 5 seconds. So it's long a breath, and you breathe immediately out for the same amount of time. And so this even in breath and out breath, what it does is it causes you to be in a state of relaxed alertness that's conducive to creativity and problem solving. So they teach this to pilots so that they, you know, if they're having a problem in midair, they start this breathing and it shifts them into a state where they're moving out of flight or fight mode into a really productive state of mind that helps them to problem solve and not panic. And we found that horses are very attracted to people who are in this state. Mm-hmm. And it makes sense because if you're too alert, you can become hypervigilant and you could spook the whole herd, you know, just being suddenly hypervigilant and hyper alert. But if you're too relaxed around horses, they have to look out for you. They have to watch you because you could become oblivious to something happening in the environment, and yes. they have to take care of you. So if you're in this state of relaxed alertness, the horse wants to be with you. And this is showing that this is who they seek for what we might call leadership. They don't want a leader who comes in and disrupts everything and who's really stern and dysregulated themselves. They're looking for a leader who is alert and awake and mindful and also relaxed and radiating a sense of connection at the same time. So this breathing is one of the techniques that helps you get into that state.
Wow. I find that so fascinating. And I may take you up on this. Can
Absolutely.
I come tomorrow?
Yes.
It sounds incredible. So I want to ask you, why did you title the book The Tao of Equus? What was the meaning behind The Tao of Equus, which is Taoism?
Yes. Well, I've been studying a lot of spiritual and religious traditions for years and really enjoying that.
Even shamanism, know. I read in the book, like even
yes.
shamanism. I mean, you went through that whole journey and
sure.
you were hearing things and they were real. Like I love the story about how you talk, but you knew that your horse, Raza, was in trouble and could not have this surgery. You knew it. You knew it in your gut, but it was like, how do I prove this? Everyone, the doctors are all saying he needs the surgery. He needs the surgery. But you kept having these dreams and you had these three experiences and these premonitions and listen to your intuition, which is also another beautiful coach-like moment for me to read about in your book, that you listened and didn't do that at all, didn't have the surgery against everyone's suggestions. And
well, actually, it wasn't just that. I mean, I got second and third opinions and they said she needed the surgery, but I kept having these dreams that it was a problem and that she was going to die. And then I had a horse artist who was a neighbor who I commissioned, or my husband commissioned her to do a portrait of Rasa.
Yes.
And I just mentioned as she came out, you know, that Rasa was having the surgery. And she called me like 2 days later and she said, I kept having this dream for an entire week that a surgeon was cutting into black fur and I was screaming, no, no, no. And then she said, and then I came out and I saw your horse and then I heard about this surgery. And then I found out another person that I knew had had similar surgery with her horse.
And that horse
and
died.
The horse died.
Yes.
And so based on, and the two of us were just like, okay, we're both having weird dreams about this. I'm going with this. So I stopped the surgery. But it wasn't just my intuition. It was also this other person's intuition who was a neighbor down the street I hadn't seen in 6 months. Oh. And she was having these dreams. So then it started to help me to understand, it seems like Rasa has a destiny of her own.
Right.
And
right.
Rasa must have her own guidance and her own protection to be able to have some force of consciousness send dreams both to me and to my neighbor down the street to stop the surgery.
Yes.
And,
powerful stuff.
You know, I wasn't really going to be able to ride her competitively. I wanted to be an endurance racer with her. And because she was lame, that opened up the whole possibility of doing this field of equine facilitated learning, which didn't exist at that time. So it was almost like Rasa's destiny and Rasa's calling caused me to go in this whole new direction.
Wow. And you prolonged Rasa's life for many years, and she was rehabilitated and got to just feel good and be running in a field and living and breathing, and you got to be with her. And I'm not going to give away the end of the book, but there's such a beautiful thing at the end of the book with Rasa. Oh my God. I'll never forget coaching someone who was in the wellness industry. They were actually a massage therapist, but this woman wanted to shift to becoming a horse whisperer. And she did just that with my help and moved to Australia to work with horses. And I remember when I asked her, what do you love about horses? She talked about the feelings she has when she walks into the barn, and she described the smell of the hay, and her face lit up like a Christmas tree when she did so. And I've never really been in a barn or experienced that. I got it just from her excitement and enthusiasm. And even though I've never had a connection, I completely understood. Can you tell us more about, just in general, and since doing all this work, what you love about horses? You've studied them as this has been your life's work. What do you love about horses and your connection with them?
That comes back around to why I called the book The Tao of Equus, which I sort of went off left field, is that horses are a balance of what we might call yin and yang. In Taoism, yin is the feminine principle. It's feeling, it's openness, it's receptive. And then there's the yang, the masculine, which is overemphasized in our culture, which is the masculine, the active principle, assertiveness, bordering and heading into aggressiveness, I guess. And so 2,500 years ago, Lao Tzu, who wrote the Tao Te Ching, more or less, they're not sure if he was a real guy or just a collection of sages that took on that name. But he also wrote as a founding principle of Taoism to know the yang, but keep to the yin. Hmm. In other words, know the masculine, but keep to the feminine.
Yes.
And horses really demand that you do that. That's why I felt like these are natural Taoists here. They're already doing this. This is their nature. They know the yang. They can be powerful. They can be fast. They can be aggressive.
Wow.
They can fight off lions and wolves. They absolutely can. Not always successfully, but many times successfully. So they know the masculine, but they keep to the feminine, the expansive, feeling, sensitive, receptive place. Yeah. And so when I understood that, because you can't be too yin around horses, you can't be too receptive,
right?
Or some of them will walk all over you. So you have to be able to use the yang to hold your ground, yeah, and then go back to the feminine. And in terms of shamanism, as you were mentioning, some of the dreams and altered states, horses throughout history and across all cultures are associated with the ability to take people from this world to the other world and bring them safely back again. And so they have a shamanic orientation, mm-hmm, but they also model a grounded spirituality. You need to be fully present when you're with them physically, even though they can also trip off altered states in humans just interacting with them. So like I can have a person go in with a horse, and I've had people go into an altered state that's highly visionary, where they get amazing ideas for even writing whole books. Or they might even have a past life memory. And I have a way of talking about past life memories with people that means that they don't have to change their religion. And I do talk about that in the Tao of Equus. But you have to be ready when you're around horses for anything to happen.
Yes.
So the work never gets boring.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's very gentle and heart opening. And sometimes it's like your whole life changes in an instant with your sense of calling coming through like it never came through before, because all the people around you have been suppressing it. And you can feel like, wow, you just had the top of your head blown off and all your brains are coming out like confetti or something. And so we actually give people tools to integrate the information. And we also have people use steps along the way so that they don't have too explosive an experience without the tools to be able to process it.
So it's like the person has to figure out their Jungian anima and animus. And it almost seems like, as you say, you can't be too relaxed. You can't be too aggressive. You just have to sort of toe the line and find. And isn't that a wonderful, mindful way to be in life?
Absolutely.
Right. To figure out what that looks like. Why are women so attracted to horses, as we mentioned off the top?
Well, I think it's partly because they do have that orientation, and we just sense this instinctually to know the yang but keep to the yin. They really are more in the yin state more often, which would be the feminine receptive feeling state.
Yes.
But they're not predators, and they're powerful and they're beautiful. So that combination, and graceful, and my goodness. So, yeah.
I mentioned this woman that went off to work as a horse whisperer and to work with horses and with teens and horses. And I'm just wondering, you have a beautiful section in the book called Horse Whisperings. So what is Horse Whisperings? Can you explain exactly what that is? We're going to find out more about Horse Whisperings when we come back after this short commercial break. We'll be right back in a moment.
Finding Your Bliss is brought to you by CREATE, Canada's leading fertility center for over 25 years.
CREATE is here for anyone struggling with infertility or in need of assisted reproductive technology to have children. CREATE is about cutting-edge science from highly skilled doctors. In unprecedented times like these, CREATE is about ensuring the safety of all patients and staff. CREATE has made important changes to protect you by ensuring social distancing, wearing masks, as well as screening before entering. So what about the bundle of joy that you've been hoping would come into your family? CREATE Fertility Center is here for you. Visit createivf.com to keep up with the latest changes and learn about CREATE Fertility Center's comprehensive care for every fertility journey. Keep safe and healthy during these challenging days, remembering that life is about moments that we create together.
Hi, everyone. We're back. This is Finding Your Bliss on Zoomer Radio, AM 740. And just before the break, Linda, I was asking you what exactly horse whisperings are all about.
Well, when you call someone a horse whisperer, what you really mean is that they're using huge amounts of nonverbal information. And so that's why it feels like it's a whisper. Mm-hmm. So horses are communicating all the time. And to tell you the truth, only 10% of human communication is verbal. Psychologists determined that in the 1990s. Mm-hmm. So that means 90% of the messages we send back and forth to each other are in that nonverbal range. Mm-hmm. When you're with horses, the nonverbal is essential. You can't just talk at the horse. You have to have a full-bodied engagement with the horse that's also engaging the nonverbal elements. And some of the nonverbal elements are related to feeling. Some of it's related to breathing. Some of it's related to body posture. And some of it's actually truly related to the energy field. And I can interact with horses through engagement with the energy field, and I can teach people to do that. Mm. So then you learn how to read that same language among humans and how to shift things productively among humans by using the same techniques. But it's all at a whisper. In other words, it's nonverbal.
I love this story of your horse, Raz. I know we've mentioned Raz and how you really brought her to this beautiful place and got to enjoy her spirit and yours for many more years to come. Can you tell us a little bit more about Raz?
She was a natural healer, and I do believe it was her calling to help start this field. Because once you entertain the notion that Raz's injury, which made her unrideable in a competitive sense. I mean, I could get on a trail at the end and ride her at a walk, but she you know, by having this lameness, she was free to interact with people in ways that didn't have to do with writing and showing. And so she really is responsible for helping to create this field.
Wow.
And she was a natural healer. And so she is one of those horses who could sense when somebody's distressed and not just reflect the, or catch the disruption or the dysregulation, which some horses do.
Yes.
She had the capacity to move towards someone in that state and actually shift them into a calm and connected state. So she was herself a natural healer and one of the best I've ever seen.
Did you have a love? Would you call it an unconditional love?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think all horses have unconditional love. Yeah. So even if the horse is mirroring something in you that might seem like they're rejecting you or they're agitated, the split second your nervous system and your thoughts and your emotions shift, they're right there with you. They don't hold grudges. They don't get preconceived notions about you. Yeah. They are just radiating unconditional love and connection, but not the kind of unconditional love that is indulgent at all. They are not indulgent. They demand that you be balanced in body, mind, spirit, and emotion. And when you show that you're moving toward that sense of balance, they immediately reward you.
It's great.
And so they're like amazing biofeedback agents that are sentient and loving and engaged and really here for us.
It's just beautiful. You've said this book would not exist, Linda, without the support of your husband, Steve Roach, whose music and life continue to reflect the hero's journey through darkness and light and all the poignant shadows in between. Can you explain more about the hero of the journey and how the hero relates to your husband?
When I was a music critic, I met my husband, Steve Roach, when he put out one of his most famous albums. I mean, he's constantly doing anniversaries for this album and concerts all over the world. It's an album called Dreamtime Return, and it came out in the late 1980s, and that's how we met. I was a music critic, and his record company sent him out for me to interview him.
Wow.
And we really hit it off. And so we moved out to the desert eventually together. And we've just been enjoying this life of music and creativity. And yeah. And when I shifted into horses for a while, that was pretty intense because neither one of us expected that our life would involve horses at that time. And he was really good at, you know, supporting me to follow my dreams, even though it seemed like all of a sudden it was in an area that he didn't completely understand. And I actually sold my viola to buy Rasa.
Wow.
And I sold most of my CD collection at that time. And then when I got the advance for the Tao of Equus, then I went and bought another viola. So it's like they took me away from music for a while and then they brought me back to a deeper, more soulful connection with music. So, I mean, that's just been an amazing full circle experience here.
I was wondering, does your husband, Steve, have a beautiful composition that maybe we could play at the end of the show via MP3 track, like just one of his beautiful compositions that you think would relate to all of this?
Absolutely. There's so many to choose from. I can't think of it at this moment, but we could definitely
In the next 24 to 48 hours, like just sort of discuss it with him. Give us a couple of choices, ideally about 3 minutes in length. We can go even a little bit more, but around that.
Okay.
And we could have his music play us out of this show, which I think would be a beautiful connection also with what you were saying earlier about horses and music and all of that. One other very quick thing I want to say is in this book, there's so many wonderful references to films and to movies and books and the role of spirituality, you know, of horses. And I was fascinated to hear that you interviewed William Shatner about his book. I also have a connection with William Shatner. Can you just tell us briefly about that interview?
Well, actually, I got to stay in his guest house and be a part of his 85th birthday celebration.
Oh my God, that's pretty cool.
I know, it was amazing. He's an incredibly charismatic, full of life person, I'm sure you know.
Yes.
He never stops learning. So he read the Tao of Equus, and I had met his wife, Elizabeth Shatner, at a conference on working with veterans with horses. Elizabeth is an amazing rider, as is William. And so she had him read my book. And then she reached out to me and said, would you come over and be part of his 85th birthday celebration?
Wow.
And I'm a huge Star Trek fan. I grew up watching it with my dad. And, you know, I just love Star Trek, by the way. But I was like, okay. And I just trying to be cool about it. And then they brought Steve and I over and they flew us over and they picked us up and we stayed in their guest house and we had dinner with them. And then we had a whole birthday day with him and met all of his family and hung out. And my husband was helping him wire up his Bill's living room for sound because it wasn't quite right. And then Steve and I were just keeping it pretty cool, I think, the whole time. And then we got on the plane for the way back and we just looked at each other and went, I can't believe that just happened.
That is so exciting. Well, he went to my Montreal Children's Theatre School. He was one of the first. And I went years later and I was sort of known in Montreal as one of their, they did fairy tales and I starred in a lot of their fairy tales, but so did he when he was younger. And so he kind of paved the way. And there's like a few people that have come out of that school that are really famous. And I think he's the most famous of all. So I was fascinated. But yeah, that was really a cool thing. So Linda, I know they're saying it's the end of the time. I could talk to you for hours. What is the greatest golden nugget or nuggets that you want people to take away from this new, revised, wonderful edition of the Tao of Equus?
The whole thing is about connection. Connection with yourself, your authentic self, your authentic feelings, your authentic calling in life, and connecting with nature, in some sense, through the horse, and connecting with the horse as a champion of non-predatory power and deep authentic calling and acceptance for using all of your emotions as information. That's what horses demand that you do. And so really, it's just about reconnecting with yourself, with nature, and with the horse. And through that, finding resources you didn't know you had.
It's fabulous. I encourage everyone to get a copy of this beautiful book, The Tao of Equus, A Woman's Journey of Healing and Transformation Through the Way of the Horse by Linda Kohanov. And I'm going to ask you one final question. It's something we ask everyone at the end of the show. Of course, I'm going to ask you this question. What is bliss for Linda Kohanov?
It's that feeling of when everything aligns, when your body, mind, and spirit and emotions are in alignment. And at the same time that you are connected to others, it could be nature and the world around you. And it could also be an animal like the horse, or it could be a human companion. It's that feeling of being aligned and connected and expanded. Because the feeling of bliss has a quality of expansion to it, doesn't it?
Yes, absolutely.
Yes.
Rising and expanding, I always think of it as.
Yes.
Right? Because you have to dig for it and find it, find that calling, that why, that dharma, that enlightenment piece. And sometimes you have to dig to find it and excavate. And then once you find it and you hold on to it, you can watch it soar. And that's perhaps a little foreshadowing to something very beautiful that happens at the end of your book. I want to thank you very, very much for being on the show today. It really was delightful. And I'm grateful to know all of this. And I don't know, I think this might not be the end of the connection between me and this book and horses. I don't know. You've awakened a light in me. And
you know, the book appeals to people whether they've ever thought about horses in their lives or not, because it's the adventure, it's the journey, it's the expansion of consciousness and the moving through challenges to find your true calling. So yeah, I think you would enjoy, and to come out and do the work, you do not have to have previous experience with horses. You could be afraid of horses, and learning how to face the fear in a way in which you are safe every step of the way through connections with others is a really important piece of this.
That's beautiful. Can I ask you, Linda, what is the best way for people to connect with you, to follow you on social media, on your website, and of course, to get a copy of your beautiful book, The Tao of Equus?
Well, you can get The Tao of Equus at, you know, through any online or retail outfit. And if you go to my website, which is eponaquest.com, which is E, P as in Paul, O, N as in Nick, AQUEST.com, you'll see I also have a variety of online courses where you can learn some of these pieces in the comfort of your own home if you're not ready to go out to the barn. And they are absolutely the pieces about taking horse wisdom back to the human world. And it can help you with your horses and other animals. And I teach this special breathing on that course, Connections 101.
Oh, I love that.
So, and there's other courses on there, and they are fully produced. There's you'll see video and images of Rasa and the other horses. So if you want to get a feeling for the book, I would recommend Connections 101 to start with. And you can connect with that through my website. You can also see in-person workshops that are available. And you can also read about the apprenticeship program. It's a multi-week program where we teach people how to do this work, equine facilitated learning, or if you're a therapist, equine facilitated therapy. And there's a lot of fun things on there. There's also actually at the very top of the website, eponaquest.com, there's a free download of emotional intelligence skills for people who work with horses and other animals. So you can even learn how to use emotions effectively as information when you're working with animals, including traumatized animals.
Awesome.
So, and it works with traumatized people too, by the way. So
that's awesome stuff. I want to thank you so much for being on the show today. It's really been delightful having you here. I'm so glad that we were able to do this.
Wonderful. Well, it was pure bliss for me.
Same.
Thank you, Judy.
Each week we spotlight a fabulous person like Linda Kohanov, who is living their bliss. So if you're an author, artist, yoga, meditation, or mindfulness expert, or really anyone who has found and is following their bliss, we would love to feature you. And as I just mentioned to Linda, we also love to feature singers, songwriters, composers, and musicians on the show. So if you are one of those people, please reach out to us. Also, what did you love about today's program? Are there any guests or topics you'd like us to feature on Finding Your Bliss? Just write to us at fybfindyourbliss.com. And for those of you who don't know, I'm also the Bliss Coach. That means I help you get unstuck, gain clarity, find your passion and purpose. You can just reach out to me at findyourbliss.com/coaching. I'm also on Insight Timer, the number one free meditation app. And of course, you can always follow us at the Bliss Minute on Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook. To close out the show today, we're going to listen to a beautiful piece of music written by composer Steve Roach, and it's called Magnificent Gallery. Steve Roach is a leading American pioneer in the evolution of ambient electronic music, helping shape it into what it is today. Twice Grammy nominated, his career spans over four decades and nearly 150 releases. Roach is an artist operating at the pinnacle of his career, driven by a passion and unbroken focus that lives within the soul-stirring depth of his music. Without further ado, here is Steve Roach's composition, Magnificent Gallery. Let's all have a listen. Was so calming and beautiful. It's really like a meditation in itself. We want to thank our wonderful guest, Linda Kohana, for being here today. Also, thank you to Steve Roach for his beautiful music. A special thank you to Mag Ruffman, Siobhan Kylie, producer Olivia Weatherall, associate producer Olivia Vigiani, audio engineer Juliana Yannicello, senior editor Lauren Kaminsky, video editor Sierra Brown Rodriguez, audio producer Faz Kazi, and everyone here at Zoomer. And of course, a big thank you to our sponsor, the Create Fertility Center. We're going to close out the show now with a short meditation. So to arrive, just find a comfortable position, whether you're lying down on a mat or on your bed or reclining in a chair. And if it's available to you here, gently close your eyes. Let's all begin by taking in a nice deep breath in through the nose, holding it at the top and letting it all go in a nice long exhale. If any thoughts or feelings come up, just notice them and return to the breath. If you start to notice thoughts, just know they are just thoughts and they begin to lose their power when you notice them and witness them and just watch them float away. Breathing in peace here in through the nose, breathing out stress on the exhale, letting go of worry and reminding yourself of everything that can go right instead of wrong. Trust that all will be well. Breathing in love, taking a nice deep inhale here, and breathing out fear. Wishing that all beings everywhere feel this sense of peace, calm, and love. Whenever you're ready, gently open your eyes, wiggle your fingers and toes, stretch, yawn, and smile. And thank yourself for giving yourself this time to practice this meditation. For everyone here, I'm Judy Liebrack, reminding you all to take one step closer to finding your bliss.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.